child and don't cry. Your folks might understand you by and by. Just move on up toward your destination.
Now, what are the odds of having Curtis Mayfield back to back? Gary chose him as outro, and I'm choosing him as intro today. It's Chicago-born and raised singer, songwriter, guitarist, and producer Curtis Mayfield, one of the cultural icons and political messengers of the 1960s, with one of his many classics, Move On Up. It's from his 1970 album, Curtis. Mayfield was performing at a summer concert in Brooklyn in 1990 when a piece of lighting equipment fell on him, paralyzing him from the neck down. But it didn't slow him down. He continued to work up until his death in 1999 at the age of 57. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. Kim Davis, the clerk of Rowan County, Kentucky, who refuses to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples because such unions, she says, are against her beliefs as an apostolic Christian, returns to work today. She still is holding to her so-called moral conscience, unquote, and demanding an accommodation that would exempt her from actually affixing her name to official marriage licenses. U.S. District Judge David Bunning had ordered Davis jailed on September the 3rd for refusing to license same-sex marriages. Davis served 6 days and has become a far-right cause célèbre for religious freedom. But today I'm asking you to put on your thinking caps, your analyst caps, and we will discuss this matter of where the intersection is between religious freedom and bigotry. And we will also explore how the media, for clearly political reasons, is maintaining what it believes to be fairness in coverage by walking on both sides of the fence at the same time. Let's hear, get some background context for today's developments. Here's HLN's Nick Valencia reporting.
The attorneys for Kim Davis filed the appeal on Friday in front of the Sixth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals, asking for a delay in marriage licenses. Their argument is that all of those who are seeking marriage licenses have been granted them. Therefore, when Kim Davis returns to office on Monday, she should not be required, nor should her office be required, to issue those licenses. A lower court denied the appeal, so now the attorneys are taking it to a higher court in attempts of getting a resolution there. All along, Davis has maintained that her moral beliefs as a Christian don't allow her to issue those same-sex marriage licenses. She simply is opposed to them and essentially has said she'd rather break federal law than break her moral conscience. Her supporters, they've equated her to a Christian martyr, saying that she represents everything right about the Christian right. And her critics, they wanted to resign. This is an elected position that she has there as the county clerk in Rowan County, Kentucky. Many are asking, why not just hold a special election or perhaps a referendum there for Kim Davis? On Monday, she goes back to work, and her attorney, when asked by CNN, was unwilling to say whether or not Davis would do more of the same and deny those marriage licenses, simply saying that his client, Davis, has an oath to God, an oath that she is unwilling to break.
Nick, thank you for that. Well, meantime, an LGBT rights
there. And here's a question for you. Now, this has been an issue in the news for quite a while now, and it has risen to the point of a cause célèbre. And what I want to ask you to do today in this segment at 888-874-4888, from your perspective, What is at issue here? Now, this is separate from your opinion. We're not looking for your opinion today. That would be Friday. We're looking for your analysis. What is at issue here? And are you getting at that issue based on the media coverage of this particular situation? Do you find that you are able to get from media coverage what is at issue here and what, in your opinion, is at issue? Now, this has nothing to do with whether you agree or disagree with same-sex marriage. We're interested in, here's something that has now become a major story. It's a major story. How and why it has become a major story is a very important thing. But do we understand what the issue is? And do we get coverage of that thing or those things that you consider to be the issues in this case? And I think we would have a very interesting discussion around this, because what we are likely to discover is that what really is at issue from your perspective is entirely different from what the media are saying and what the individuals involved are saying. The main person, Kim Davis, and her supporters, the Huckabees of the world and so forth, the far right, the religious community. And now we will understand how this particular issue, which we should appreciate, by the way, because it does address some very important questions. However, are those very important questions routinely raised in the course of coverage of this issue? And so do we get an understanding as the public in the media exposure we have via newspapers, via television, radio? Are we really educated about what is at issue here? What do you think? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And let's get analysis going. That's the key word today, analysis. We're not interested in just your opinion. That's a whole different thing. An analysis is a clinical assessment of a situation, just as it is. And therefore, I know you're skilled. I know you're very, very good at disassembling things and looking under the rocks and finding out all the details and putting them together to form a picture. And certainly, we've been doing this a lot on Lead Stories. We like to disassemble things and look at the component parts. And if we were to do that in this case, what are we likely to come away with? Are you up to the job? Let me know at 888-874-4888. This is part of what we have been doing here on this program called media literacy. You ought to be very careful in your consumption of media. As a consumer of information, what is it that we're taking in that ultimately becomes part of our reservoir of information from which we draw every day to make sense of the world that surrounds us? And we depend on media organizations to give us the so-called news. Okay, so now we have a situation. Here is a woman, Kim Davis. She's an elected official in Rowan County. She is the clerk of the county, and part of her job is to issue marriage licenses. She finds, because she is a born-again Christian, she finds that that task is directly against her newfound religious beliefs, whether newfound or old, it really doesn't matter. This is what she believes. She believes this is against her moral conscience. And she says no way is she going to issue marriage licenses. A judge saying that it happens that clerks of the county, all clerks who issue marriage licenses, are required as part of their jobs to do so. It is the law. So she says, nope, not for me. The judge says, then go to jail, which she did. She comes out a hero and still insisting that she will not issue marriage licenses because they are an affront to her religious beliefs. What should we be appreciating here as the critical issues? Rose Ellen from Queens, you're up first.
Well, to me, it's the critical issue, I think, is equal treatment under the law, according to the Constitution, which means in a public space, which, you know, applying for a license to marry is, and she wants to violate people's constitutional right to equal protection. When they show up, she cannot say, you're not the kind of people that have the right to get married, so I'm not going to do my job. The first issue is equal treatment under the law, which he is violating in a public space, and constitutionally protected. The court said they can marry. That's the end of that for now. And that's what she's violating. Also, the other principle of your right to religious freedom, which is very important. It's right up there in the Constitution, cannot trump in a public space the rights of other people to not be discriminated against, and which
All
is
right.
what she wants to do. Which is what she wants to do. She wants to say, "Well, my deputy will do it, but he's out to lunch. So if you're gay, now you have to wait a half hour for the deputy to come back from lunch. Whereas if you're straight, you don't have to wait for the deputy to come back from lunch. And that is a violation. That is an adverse effect on these people simply because of who they are, which is discriminatory."
All right. Thank you. Russell from New Jersey. What is at issue
here?
But
not for them. I believe in freedom for all sides. I happen to be gay, and I happen to be spiritual but not religious, and I believe that both homosexuals and heterosexuals are equally capable of being compassionate and ethical and spiritual. However, I don't think that only my freedom should be honored and protected. I believe that people who disagree with me should also have their freedoms honored and protected. So what I would like to see is if I want to get married, I want to be able to get a license. But I don't want to force somebody else to do it. And I say the same thing applies with abortion. I believe that as a president said, though I don't know whether he believed it himself, but he said that abortion should be rare but legal, and that's the way I feel too. But if a doctor or a nurse doesn't want to participate, I do believe in conscientious objection. Whether it's on my side, for example, I have an uncle and a brother who were conscientious objectors and refused to join the military, and I believe in their freedom. But I don't believe that, although I'm liberal progressive myself, I don't believe that only liberal progressives should have freedoms, freedom of speech, freedom of action, etc. I believe in freedom for everybody. So my analysis is
This is your personal freedom, I mean your personal thinking, and I appreciate that. What is being covered here? Is that the issue here, or is it something else, something deeper?
I'm sorry, there was a buzz. You said, could you give me that again, please?
I'm saying I understand this is your personal opinion, and that's great. So we get a sense of where you are personally on the issue.
Yes.
In terms of media coverage, what have you learned as the issue?
Well, I haven't been following the media, but I think the media usually says we have this side and we have the other side, and which one is right? And first of all, I believe there are always more than two sides on any issue. And usually the media will focus on two extremes. And also the media will usually make both extremes appear to be equally balanced, when in fact the majority of people are probably somewhere in the middle, and there are many more than two viewpoints, and the two extremes are not equally balanced. So my analysis of the news is that they care less about the truth than about having a dog and pony show and a contest.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Russell, for your call today. Great hearing from you. Also from New Jersey, Donald, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrecht.
Nice. Hello.
Hello, can you hear me pretty good?
Yes, thank you.
I think this is connected to a larger issue that you make a reference to that's not covered in the media, and that are recent rulings on the Supreme Court around Hobby Lobby and a couple of other state laws that have been passed that have since been repealed that allow private companies to discriminate against gays and others if they feel fit to do so. And I think there's a large connection here. They're not making that connection. And I think that's the real issue here, is that this woman is taking something from that playbook and using it here, and no one's really challenging the fact that this is connected to some of the bollocks that have gone on in the Supreme Court and some of these state constitutions that have been put together to discriminate against people across the board who may not feel equal, should be treated equally.
Now, why would you think that?
Because it's apparent that this is a growing trend, right, that people are becoming more and more insular and not really paying attention to some of the oaths that they're taking as state and federal workers to protect the Constitution and all that entails. And so we're seeing sort of, an erosion or a breakdown of the understanding of what this country was built on, what the Constitution and the Bill of Rights are about, and doing everything possible to protect it and to expand it to include everybody in our society. And I think that we're losing that understanding and that sort of civic understanding of what it is to be a public servant, what it is to be an American citizen, and the documents that codify that citizen.
So if the media were to listen to this particular position of yours, how would the coverage of this actually be different? How would it change? And what would that change then afford the rest of us to appreciate?
I think if the media made the connection between these points, I think the talking heads that would be on these shows would be making the link between what's in the Constitution and what is what's being argued by these people as antithetical to the Constitution. So I think it would expand the conversation. People would go back and look at, well, wait a minute. The Constitution is really here to protect and to expand that protection, not necessarily take away and break down, you know, our society by, you know, seconding people out of it. I think the most of the population would then get to an understanding that we need to protect the rules of rule of law, the Constitution, and all that entails, and not get so riled up into and making the connection or merging church and state into our everyday lives, because then we become sort of a despot in many ways rather than a so-called democracy.
But does Russell, who spoke just before you, does Russell have a point when he says that even the rights, if you're talking about constitutional protections, even the rights of people like Kim Davis as a conscientious objector are to be protected?
Yes, absolutely be protected, but also be a former employee of the state.
Protect your rights to freedom of your religious freedoms, but as a former employee.
That's right. As a former employee, you took the oath to protect the Constitution, and that supersedes your religious affiliation or belief. And therefore, if you are serious and you stand on principle, then resign your position and go into the public and into private life and espouse your beliefs all you want, but not under the employment of the state. And therefore, you can do whatever you want to do at that point, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, I'm going to now push you a little bit. Why is this the big issue? How did this become a big issue, you think?
Well, because we have people like Donald Trump and his antics and his vitriol in the media over the last several months has sort of heightened this intensity around these subjects of, you know, religious rights and immigration and things of that nature. And this is also allowing the media to focus on it and sell advertisement and get people on TV who will talk about this and basically make money off of this controversy through their sponsorships. And I think that's primarily why it's in the media today and why it's such a big deal.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Donald. Great stuff. From Brooklyn, is it Jean or Jean?
Hi, Trace.
Hello.
I believe that this is basically an issue of separation of church and state. And I think that this is only the tip of the iceberg because the definitions are not clear. You know, the definition of marriage is within the confines of the church, and we've been dealing with that from the beginning. And now all of a sudden, you've changed the definition from what it originally was. And I think that you're going to have to tweak every law that has anything to do with the issue where there was the idea of a man being the husband and a woman being the wife. So there are going to be a lot of other things coming up as a result of this. And I think it has to do with the fact of the definitions. And this is the way we started out. But it really is an issue of how we were really into an insidious relationship between the church and the state on this. And now it's sort of blowing up into this conundrum of problems.
So how did this, I'm going to ask you the bedeviling question, how did this become a big story?
How did this happen?
How did it become a big story? And why is it a big story? Apart from the things that we have discussed so far, could you find anything else that might be a reason that this is a big story?
I can't think of anything else.
Well, you've thought a great deal because what you've contributed so far is quite profound. So I have to thank you for what you've done so far. But if you do happen to think a bit more, let us know in the following days, okay? Thanks, Jean, for your call. Ali from New York, also, you're on the air.
How are you, Therese? How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. So,
congratulations on your gold medal.
Thank you so much.
Now
thank
you need to go to the Olympics.
Yeah, I'm about to challenge Usain Bolt in a minute.
Okay.
See if you could outrun me.
Okay, I just wanted to say that I just had to agree with some of the things that the gentleman who just called before, the lady from New Jersey. One of the things that I just wanted to ask you is that lady was elected. That's what I understood you said, that she was. She's
yes.
A Clark County, but it's a political position. So don't you take an oath when you are elected that you will follow the Constitution or whatever law is on the books?
That is what is generally understood, yes.
So
that's my question. So then why is this a story?
To me, it's related to what that gentleman was saying. Huckabee is involved in this, promoting this overview around the country. And if you take a look, anybody could reject anybody. But when you take an oath and you are a public servant,
I believe you have to follow the law, even if you don't want to, because you took an oath to follow the Constitution. And when you talk about Donald Trump and the other issues around, like the issue about abortion, and you put all those issues together, is related. And now you're talking about race, racism. So she could just tell a biracial couple who wants to go and marry, because of my religion belief, you guys are not in the same, you are in the human race, but I don't see you as the same people, because it's two different races. So,
well, actually,
so,
you know, this whole thing actually came out of a case where a couple, a biracial couple, wanted to get married in Mississippi, and they were prohibited by law because the law forbade interracial marriages at the time. This is, in fact, what has been the precursor to this movement now about same-sex marriages. It's predicated on that case called Loving, oddly enough, the name of the couple and their case,
and
Loving.
I think she died early this year or last year. I remember when she passed away. So what I'm trying to convey here, that the whole issue, if we look, is immigration. This Donald Trump bringing into the earthway and is prohibiting people to even become citizen of this country. So all these things together as a group, I think, is the issue. What they bring. Look at all these Republicans, and including Democrats, too, that they just camouflage themselves, that they know that the time's going to come when all these brown people going to be the majority in this country. So you have to start a system where you could exclude certain group, and you start with one group first, and then you continue down the line. That's what I think the issue is. It's everything. It's racism, it's taking away your rights, and all these things together. That's what I believe.
Okay. Well, we're getting close. Thanks a lot, Ali, for your comments today. New York is raining today. New York is dominating the field. We have Vincent on next.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vincent.
Take it slow with me, because this big thought on my mind. I would like to say that I think we are actually regressing in society.
All right, but Vincent, I have to caution you. We're looking for your analysis, not your opinion today. Opinions will come later on in the week. Today, we're looking for an analysis as to why this is a story, a big story.
Okay, I'll word it differently then. Well, it's some might see it that this is being talked and discussed due to what media outlets that you have access to and when and where you hear your media reports on a certain topic such as this, in comparison to how close you are to what's actually happening there on the ground. So it awakes the consciousness of a people to see that we might be regressing and opening our minds to what religion actually is to some people, which is a structured way of how you practice your spirituality. And the more that we discuss this as a people and don't look to it as it's being reported as a civil right, you will see it's actually a human right. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay, so how did this become a story?
Well, it's always
been a story.
And
why is it a big story?
It's always been a story, and always a big story for those who want to tackle that issue, because some people think that the Constitution of the United States, as defined by those who speak of it, is the supreme law of the land. But within different parts of that Constitution, there are wordings that are not defined, and it's defined by those who discuss it and bring it up as an issue.
But still, we do have the fact that this is an elected position, And in that position, anybody elected to that position would be expected to perform all the tasks and duties associated with that position. And it does not come with the authority to obey certain things that you want and then to not obey other things. It is one of those things. If you're running for dog catcher, the assumption is you're prepared to catch dogs. Now, you can't run for dog catcher and say, well, sorry, but I'm really into cats. So I will not be catching dogs. I'll be concentrating on cats. You don't have that. You just don't have that right.
Well,
she has been elected as the county clerk, and she is deciding unilaterally that her religious beliefs far outweigh any legal obligation that she has as the county of the clerk to observe a law that says all people applying for marriage licenses, including same-sex couples, should get them.
Actually,
now, what do you say? Why is this a big story?
Well, it's a big story to some because they might believe that she's saying that she doesn't have to follow the law. But if that job duty is within that state, county, and that state law actually falls under the federal constitution. Now, some might say you have states' rights, so forth, but that constitution in the First Amendment is one of the Bill of Rights, and it doesn't define how you practice your religion, but it does word that Congress, meaning the people, can make no right to trample on that free exercise of your faith. So even though you take a job, your faith goes with you whether you're employed or not, no matter what your job description is.
Great, but it also says, as Donald said to us, she is free to hold to her religious beliefs, including as a former clerk. In other words, resign, quit, get another job.
Well,
that will not constantly put you at risk of betraying your religious beliefs. But her position
is that,
this is my job. I got it. I own it. And in my job, you are not going to force me to do something I don't want to do.
Well, the thing about it is that she has the right to practice her faith. And I didn't hear anyone say that practicing your faith must mean that you must resign your duties for the state.
Okay. Well, I see where you're going. And it's a very interesting place because it also was the point that Russell had made, that she is, in your view, a conscientious objector. Well, let's try one. Thank you so much for calling. Let's try one more call before we break and go to the next segment. And Patricia from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hello, how you doing, Chutrice?
Fine, thank you. Why is this a big story?
Well, it's a story, I believe, now, only for the political attacks. Because if I'm not mistaken, this lady's situation occurred months ago. It wasn't a big issue. But now I think it's a big issue now only because now the political hacks of campaigning can use this, and this can be a jump off for the media coverage. I remember last week you talking about why was Donald Trump getting free time. And, you know, the media people would say, well, give him some free time, so when it's time for the money to roll in for pay time, we can get it. So this may be part and parcel on that same level. You know, maybe a little different, but on the same level. They might be able to get some finances from the media hacks to pay for, especially those who are, in fact, on the side of, what do you call these, Bible Belt toting politicians who talk about, their moral rights and things of that. That may give them a platform surrounding this lady. So that's why I think that maybe this is the reason why this may be, in fact, an issue now, as opposed to months ago when this lady had first made the indication that she wouldn't do this. It wasn't a big thing. Nobody made a big thing out of it. But, you know, now it's starting to rev up a little bit in the political field. It gives an opportunity for some of these people maybe in last place, maybe able to jump up there and wave their religious moral rights on their arm and take her case and use this to push forth, you know, just extra coverage, and then, you know, the media can get paid for it. That could be a possibility.
Very much so. Well, we'll close out the segment, and thank you so much, Patricia, for your call. But I will tell you, people got close to it, but they didn't get it today. So I'm going to keep you all tense and in suspense until perhaps Friday, when we get back to this subject and at Free Your Mind Friday, and somebody may actually get the thing right on, spot on. But so far, everything has been incredibly important in this discussion. We'll take this break and come back and talk about Ferguson right after this.
Take nothing less than the supreme best. Do not obey, you must be forsaken, but you can pass the test. Just move on. Just a little faith. If you put your mind to it, you can surely do it. Just move on.
You're listening to PRN.FM, and you're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. Almost 10 months after it was given a wide-ranging mandate to study the underlying causes of the rebellion in Ferguson, Missouri, in the killing of Michael Brown by then-police officer Darren Wilson, the 16-member Ferguson Commission today releases the end result of its investigation, a 198-page report titled Forward Through Ferguson, A Path Toward Racial Equity. The report makes 169 recommendations in four areas: justice for all, youth at the center, opportunity to thrive, and racial equity. Well, we're not going to get into the details because I just got a copy of the report and I'd like to read it, but we are scheduled to discuss this in detail on Wednesday. So we will ask you to tune in, keep your antennae up for Wednesday. But let's get a little background. Here's Missouri Governor Jay Nixon swearing in the members of the commission. And this is what he had to say back then, about almost 10 months ago, about why this commission was formed.
My office received the names of more than 300 citizens willing to step forward at a time of uncertainty and unrest and serve on the Ferguson Commission. Today, I am pleased to introduce 16 men and women who I have appointed to serve this region and our state as members of the Ferguson Commission. They bring to the table a rich diversity of life experience and points of views. They include business owners and not-for-profit leaders, teachers and lawyers, police officers and community activists, pastors and public servants. My charge to the commission is threefold. First, to conduct a wide-ranging, in-depth study of the underlying issues brought to light by the events in Ferguson. Second, to tap the expertise needed to address the concerns identified by the commission, from poverty and education to governance and law enforcement. And third, to issue a report no later than September 15th, 2015, containing specific practical recommendations for making this region a stronger, fairer place for everyone to live.
Well, that sounds very good. So this commission has already fulfilled one of its key mandates, which is to get a report done. Today, they have issued the 198-page report. I have yet to read it in detail, so we'll be discussing that on Wednesday. But the task today, since we are in full analysis mode, the second part of our analysis mode is, in your view, as to what you might expect a report of this type to do. What is this report supposed to address from your particular point of view? Because we will square that up, your expectations versus what this report actually will be saying, based on what the governor outlined as the three main purposes of this report: to conduct a wide-ranging study as to what caused the rebellion in Ferguson, Missouri, and then to make specific recommendations as to what should be done. And I'm asking because here's the thing. When you read a report, you have an idea of what it is the report is addressing, and automatically, because you are a person in the know, we've discussed this issue in Ferguson in great detail here on this program. So as you hear word of a report being issued, a report issued today with respect to this particular mandate given by the governor, what naturally are you expecting this report to address? Your calls at 888-874-4888. We will match that again on Wednesday. We will match your expectations with what the report actually says. And this is how we measure, and in media literacy, this is how you put to use the information that you've been getting all along on the subject. What would you expect the report to address, and why would you expect the report to address these things? Now, this is the way any reporter, by the way, all these things that we're talking about, the ways we're talking about them, this is what real conscientious reporters would do. Before you even open that report at all, you would have a good idea, because you've been covering the subject, you would be looking for specific things. The question in this segment is, what are those things that this report, 198 pages of it, carved into four different sections, what should this report actually be addressing? And if you want to extend that further, what would you even now, as the report becomes available, what do you think the report will not address? That's the question in this segment of the program. 888-874-4888. Today is your analytical day. We're taking a look at how you internalize the information that is made available to us as media coverage, news coverage of events. But then, of course, we are independent thinkers, and we have been covering these issues for some time, and we have a reservoir of information that allows us to make some informed conclusions and decisions about things, and to shape our expectations. So when somebody says that there's this major report, it's almost 10 months in the making, it is a report that comes immediately after a major upheaval in Ferguson, Missouri, after the police killing of an 18-year-old young man. And it is a report that, it is an incident, by the way, that triggered similar reactions across the country and even outside of the United States. This was a huge event. So the report coming 10 months almost to the point at which it was the commission was appointed to look into these things, just before we even get into the report on Wednesday, what are your thoughts about it? What do you expect will be in that report or should be in that report? What do you expect or anticipate will not be in that report? And then on Wednesday, when we take the report apart or begin to take the report apart, we will see how your expectations square up with what the report actually delivers. All right. 888-874-4888. Now, why are we going through this exercise? It is because that we ought to, by now, and I'm sure this is, I feel certain that this is the case with this audience, you're thinking people. And we cannot be passive consumers of information. We have to be active consumers of information. And we have to be able to tell when things just are not adding up. They're not making sense. And we should know why they're not making sense. They're not making sense for a particular reason, and that is because we have information. We have reason to believe that they're not making sense. Ferguson, Missouri was the epicenter of widespread political activity based on not just the killing of Michael Brown by police, but because this was an issue that had become so endemic, so pervasive in the United States. And it was also the result of a number of related issues that had gone unaddressed for decades that were not unique to Ferguson, Missouri, but were prevalent all throughout the United States, but particularly in communities of color. So we've had many of these kinds of reports before in issues, in circumstances that mirrored that of Ferguson. And so you have a sense now, I would think, of these kinds of reports and what you would expect. From Chicago, Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, Jatrice, how you doing?
Great.
All right. I thought I'd tackle this one, even though I've had a little time to study over it. But I think the typical analysis that you'll see from this report is, you know, the high unemployment rate in the black communities and brown communities, crime rate, bad schools, you know, typical of what you see in any report in an urban area. But, you know, as with these reports, they always tell you how and never tell you why. And the one thing that you will not see in the report is the role that white supremacy plays. So, you know, you'll get your, you know, you'll get the hardcore facts on, you know, high unemployment rate and crime and this and that. But, you know, and even a couple of cases of, you know, police brutality here and there, but never the why. On why these people are suffering the way that they're suffering. So it's kind of like my analysis on it.
Why? What would lead you to say that?
Well, looking at other, I guess looking at other reports, like I was thinking about the 9/11 Commission report that came out, which was, you know, a 100-page document of absolutely nothing. It never gave you why somebody would do something like this. So it's sort of like they always tell you the how, but never the why. So, you know, I look at other reports that I've read and it never, especially when it's commissioned by the government or any government, in this country. And it just never gives you an exact, science of why stuff like this happens. So,
before we get into the report, you already are suspicious about whether this report would actually reveal something not already known or reasonable to assume.
Well, I mean, I've taken a pessimistic approach to this, and yeah, I don't feel.
Is it pessimistic or realistic?
Well, kind of a little bit of both, but I just don't feel like this report is going to give us a hardcore solution, even though they're claiming that there's going to be solutions in it, because of the fact that, like I said, they don't tackle the why. They always tackle the how this happened. But why did it happen? And you can't solve a problem if you don't know why it happened.
If they were to tell you, if this report should tell you the why, what would you expect that why to be?
The why, basically it'll touch on, I don't know exact details, but it will have something to do with white supremacy. And I would basically break it down to that's where the why is going. Why are these people suffering the way that they're suffering? Because, you know, they make it seem like, well, poor people in this country go through the same thing. And I just don't believe that, you know, poor, you know, like all poor people in this country have to suffer, like, say, from the hands of police brutality. You know, like majority or probably all of poor black communities and brown communities. So they'll make it seem like it's more of a class issue than a race issue, even though they'll sprinkle a little racial epitome in the report.
Okay. Aren't you being you used the word pessimistic, but as I hear you, are you being, in fact, pessimistic, more pessimistic than realistic?
Well, some people think I am pessimistic about it, but I just like you said, I'm just doing my analysis of it, you know, and the historical context.
I like the way you turned it back on me there, Henry. Thank you.
All righty.
Thank you for your call. Thanks so much. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Oh, good afternoon, Utrice. Pleasure to talk to you again.
Same here.
I'm going to take Henry's perspective and then just expand on it a little bit more, because I mean, I think he's in the right area. You know, people like to talk about symptoms, so they talk about, you know, the violence that we inflict on each other. And what they're really talking about are symptoms without addressing the root cause of our reality in this country. And so, you know, this, I think the template for this report will follow the template of the Justice Department's report that they issued on Ferguson, which really didn't say very much. I mean, all it said was what people already had been saying, that everybody did not give any credence to. So I suspect that this report will follow that template. And what you won't see in that report, number one, you won't see any accountability for the police. They're going to be, you know, they may give a some cursory, well, we need more training, we need more this, you know, we need more community, but you won't really get a sense that police are out of control. Police bring their own viewpoint, their own cultural baggage into the job, you know, just like what we saw with James Blake. They won't go that far. The police will not be held accountable. I mean, if they really wanted a solution to this, what they would do is make the police pay for every single lawsuit that occurs. You know, there was a report that came out that, you know, over the past 5 years, police departments, the major police departments across this country, have shelled out more than $735 million in lawsuits in this country. And that's taxpayers' money. That's not one police department, you know, contributed to any of that obscene amount. So you're not going to see any responsibility on the part of the police. You're not going to, they probably won't even talk. They'll talk about some cosmetic reforms, but they won't really talk about substantive solutions as opposed to cosmetic reforms.
And what gives you the confidence to say this?
Well, as I said, the template is going to be the Justice Department's template. The template is going to be the template that you see on every report that comes out. And even the ones that have some you know, like you look at the Kerner Commission, they get put on the shelf and they're never acted upon. So, you know, these reports have absolutely no validity. They're done to appease, you know, they're done to appease the public. Okay, here's the charge. I did the charge, and we're just going to go on with business as usual.
Mm-hmm. Well, you talked about what you don't expect to see, and you talked about what you do expect to see. What, therefore, I agree with you in both instances, by the way, but what, therefore, do we make of reports like this? Because you cited the Justice Department report. We discussed that on this program, and the same thing that you just said, the Justice Department report was not justice. It did not really talk about justice in this case. But when we see these kinds of reports, automatically, you know, what you've just described is the mindset that a person would have, a conscientious reporter would have, before even opening up this report. Is this going to be like the Justice Department's report? Is this going to be like some other report? But guess what? So far, the coverage of the release of the report is saying the exact opposite. The coverage is saying the report has been issued, and they're describing all the things that have, the component parts of this report. I will read you a very short sample. A reform panel formed after the Ferguson police shooting of Michael Brown is pushing for the consolidation of police departments and municipal courts in the St. Louis area and decreasing the use of police force. The Ferguson Commission, a 16-member panel appointed by Missouri Governor Jay Nixon in November, released a copy of its 198-page report online on Monday. Nixon and members of the commission were scheduled to discuss details of the report at an afternoon news conference. The report acknowledges that the commission has no power to enact any of the proposals, but Nixon has said the commission has the full support of his office. So the reports that we are getting are about the release of a report.
That has absolutely no teeth. What's the point?
Absolutely.
Has absolutely no teeth. What's the point? Why did they even waste the money of the Missouri taxpayers? Why did they even waste their money?
And this is the question. The question should be the coverage that we should be getting at this point is not about what the report says it's going to be, that nothing that is contained in this report has any teeth to it. That should be the story, shouldn't it?
Yeah, that's
that whatever it is they're recommending.
But I haven't seen it. But I've seen other reports. And after a while, you have to understand the purpose of a report.
Sure. And that's the exercise that we are doing today, that you ought to have. The minute somebody says a report is being released, automatically your guard should be up. Just as you were today, you and Henry, you pointed out exactly what you expected. And guess what? You're on point. Both of you. Thank you so much for your call today.
Thank you.
And that's why we engage in these kinds of discussions. This is media literacy. You ought to be on guard for all kinds of information so that you don't wait to find out another 10 months worth of investigation before the report reveals itself. You already know because you have been going through a process of conscientious thinking. Stay tuned. Keep it right here at PRN.FM. The next program coming up, the Global Research News Hour, and you will want to stay tuned for that. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye. Watch out, just move on.